Amateur Presentation.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. The first thing I wanted to ask you about is the collaboration process, yeah. Specifically your work with cinematographer Rob Hardy. Mm-hmm. Over the course of the four films that you've made and Devs, mm-hmm. is there a shot or an image in that collaboration that you're most proud of?
Well, the interesting thing for me about working with Rob, and I really love working with Rob, is more to do with what his favorite shots are. So, you would think, as a DOP, it would be like a big sweeping crane move, encapsulating all sorts of stuff, something really dramatic and choreographed and beautifully framed and stuff. But often, Rob's favorite shots are the simplest shots. And almost every time, so I'll be sitting in the grade after we've shot it and we're color correcting the film, and I remember in Devs, it was a close-up of Sonoya Mizuno's head. She was just sitting at a kitchen table and she was just listening. And he said, that's my favorite shot of the film. And it's so simple and it's so elegant. And it always fascinates me that that's where his mind goes and what he is seeing in that frame. I like working with Rob. He's got a very original mind and we have almost telepathy sometimes. So yeah, I'm glad you brought him up.
Yeah, absolutely. Was there an image in this film that you found that you both were in sync with, or something that he liked that maybe you were surprised by?
I think we were in sync the whole time. There was one sequence where we were shooting a forest fire and there are sparks whirling around, and it was what gets called an in-camera effect. It was a practical effect, so there really were sparks flying around. It's not a visual effects shot, it's a practical shot. And that was unbelievably beautiful and strange and kind of magical. And for both of us, at first it was so incredible that we slightly freaked out, thinking, how do we shoot this? How do we make it, how do we get close to it looking as amazing as it looks in reality? And for about half an hour, all the shots we were doing were wrong. And then we settled into it. And I think it's not really one shot, it's a sequence of shots of that forest fire is what I would pick, maybe for both of us in that film, except Rob would probably then say, no, it's this close up, that's the best shot. Yeah.
Is it important though to make those mistakes on set and know that you can kind of rebound from them? Because obviously, you know, there's scheduling and things like that, but sometimes you find those little moments.
Do you know what? It is definitely, definitely important to understand that things are going to go wrong, things are not going to be how it was planned or imagined, and then roll with it and react to it and be okay with it. That is vital. And it also allows for happy accidents is one thing, but also seeing something, if everything is prescribed, if you know exactly what you're doing at every beat of the day, then I think it would close down the ability to suddenly see something and suddenly grab something or say, let's suddenly set this up like that. So there'll be lots of shots. Say there's a shot of Wagner, who's playing this character, Joel, who's screaming as tanks roll by him. And that was thought of and grabbed and finished in about, like, I don't know, a sort of 35-minute period. It wasn't... We didn't know we were going to do that before the day started. And oddly, that is connected to knowing things can go wrong. The whole thing is fluid, and you're just reacting within it.
You mentioned the tank just there. There's something about this movie that I'm really curious about that you've talked a little bit about with the comparisons to Apocalypse Now. How important was it for you to not sort of embellish or romanticize the violence in the film, because there are so many movies that don't understand the impact that a bullet has or the trauma that an event like this could possibly have in a film?
I think with this film, with this subject matter, if you romanticized it and made it seductive, it could pretty quickly become unethical, I would say, like a kind of irresponsible thing to do. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people work on the film, all sorts of different political positions, but there was a shared agreement that we shared an anxiety and we didn't want to accidentally make a kind of pro-Civil War movie. We wanted to make an anti-war movie. Yeah,
absolutely. Were there films that were certain inspirations for the movie? Because I thought a lot, you know, the Vietnam movies of the 1980s, but there were also a lot of Cold War films like Threads and When the Wind Blows that actually look at the human element.
Interesting you mentioned those. Yes, I also thought a lot about a film called Come and See, which is a Russian movie. Very, very powerful anti-war film, but is interesting because it, although it has great realism, it's also in many ways a surrealist film. And but largely we took our cues from real life, lived experience, documentaries, news footage. That was our, more than cinema, I would say. That was our discussion point on the ground, on the set.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned Come and See, because I was reminded a little bit of some of those close-ups that you have mm-hmm. in the post-strike sequence, mm-hmm. where you're yep. seeing the after effect of
yeah,
those moments.
Like the horror within yes. the face, yeah.
Yeah, because it says so much with, you know, just so little with the expressions. I just wanted to ask you, because, you know, you've also talked a lot about this recently, that maybe you're going to focus more on writing in the future. Mm-hmm. Do you see yourself as a writer first and a director second, or has the experience of directing movies made you more of sort of, you know, the combination of the two?
I just am a writer. I mean, I began actually a long time ago as a writing books, then became a screenwriter and ended up directing. I just see there is a thing which is filmmaking, editors are filmmakers, and DOPs are filmmakers, and production designers are filmmakers. We just don't tend to look at them as much as we probably should. I almost twitch when I see a film by credit at the start of a film.
Or from master filmmaker or something like that.
I get a semi-allergic response. I think that there are probably a handful of directors who really deserve that sort of auteur status. I guess these days, Wes Anderson would be a good example. They're sort of emphatically, profoundly Wes Anderson films. My films are not like that. There are a whole bunch of people, many of whom I've worked with many, many times, over decades. I understand that a film gets sold, the director gets given a certain kind of status. I get it. In reality, it's not really like that.
Absolutely. Well, I have to wrap up with you. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you.
And congratulations on the film. And thank you so much.
Thank you, man. Yeah. Appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks so much, Eric.
No worries. Got to say that Devs, I think, is amazing.